Welcome, everybody, to the newest episode of Legends of Sports. I am joined by a longtime Los Angeles Lakers fan. She's been following the team since 1996, living out there in the D.C. area. I hope when she was a kid, she didn't get into fights with Washington Wizards fans. Or back then, they were the Bullets when she started watching. All right, because she's a longtime Laker fan. And today, my co-host, Mabinti, will be joining me in discussing one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived. Now, I'm going to be honest. I hated this man for a very long time. I didn't get to respect him until after he retired, because he broke my heart. He broke my heart many times, because the man was an assassin. And we're talking about Dean himself, the incomparable Kobe Bryant. Mabinti, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us, how did you get started being a Laker fan growing up in the D.C. area? And what got you into the Lakers and your first impressions when you saw Kobe Bryant?
So I became a Lakers fan through my mom. You know, my mom's from California. She's from the Bay originally, but she went to UCLA and spent a lot of her life. Both of my parents spent a lot of their, that's actually where they met. They met at UCLA.
Oh, that's
and
cool. That's
so cool. They were Lakers fans. And then like one of her friends actually dated one of the Lakers too. So,
oh, wow. I don't know that's
who.
Cool.
I don't know who.
Let me see if I can guess. You don't know, but let's see if we can have an educated guess. What year would her friend have dated this Laker?
I'm trying to think. When was she at UCLA?
When did your mother graduate from college?
I truly don't know. I want to say 1980. Don't quote me. I want to say 1980, maybe.
Debbie Allen, I apologize if Norm Nixon stepped out on you with Mabinti's mother's friend.
Oh, I don't know who it was. I truly don't know which Laker.
Maybe it was Magic. No, by the way, I shared this yesterday on Twitter with Mabinti and several other Laker fans. There's a great new show coming out on HBO.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Where they chronicle Dr. Jerry Buss, the young man that plays Magic. I hope he kills it. Man, that show looks incredible. Looking forward to seeing that, and I'll probably be doing a review or two on a couple of other podcasts that I do. Anyway, so your parents met, and were both your parents a Lakers fan, or just your mom?
Well, both my parents are Lakers fans. I would say my mom more so than my dad, because my dad's, you know, West African, so, you know, football is our thing. My first love is Arsenal, and sadly,
let me tell you people out there listening. This woman is a hardcore football fan, and I'm not talking about the NFL. Yeah. I'm talking about the most popular sport in the world. Now, look, I've never followed it, but if I ever did, she'd be one of the few I'd have on here talking Messi or whoever, Thierry Henry, whoever, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, one of those guys. One of the five most respective athletes that I've respected in my lifetime that I love is Pelé. Pelé had to battle racism, and people were mocking his bicycle kick. And he revolutionized the sport of football, just like Lawrence Taylor did American football and Dr. J did basketball and the god Rakim did MC hip-hop. So Pelé took it to another level, to the point where everybody growing up in Brazil, they compare like Ronaldo. They compare to Pelé.
Yes. All right.
And as far as the Lakers go, everybody today now, if you become a Laker, they're going to compare you to Kobe. Before Kobe started, it was Magic.
Yes.
Okay. So your mother was a Laker fan. Was she a big Magic Johnson fan?
I don't think she had a favorite player. I just think she just liked the Lakers in general.
For those who are listening, go back to my Magic Johnson podcast, which so far has been the favorite of a lot of people who have listened. They love that episode because the young man that was on a podcast with me talked about his personal experiences with his aunt and his mother. They loved Magic like he was part of the family. Like,
yeah, it was hilarious. I heard it.
His mother was saying that Magic was like her other son. I love it. It was great. And the story where his cousin was stalking Magic and even drove him up to Magic's apartment trying to get inside the apartment.
Yeah, it's funny.
Okay, so take us to when you first started watching the Lakers and Kobe's rookie year and your first impressions on Kobe Bryant.
So, I mean, I was really young. So I got to say 6, 7, 8, something like that. Mm-hmm. Definitely like middle school-ish or elementary. I guess that's elementary school. Definitely elementary school, middle school-ish. And so I honestly started following Kobe because 8's my favorite number. And I was like, oh, I'm going to start following the guy number 8. You know, because he's 8, and so that was really so. No, there was no special reason me for initially following Kobe because I just loved 8, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna follow this cat. So I would say my really when I started to appreciate Kobe is when I got much older. So like maybe like 12, 13 years old.
So what year would that be?
So like I would say the three-peat era.
All right. Well, let me
2000 to let me cover, you know,
let me cover up. Let me cover up until that point. To be honest with you, Kurt Rambis and the rest of the LA coaching staff, they didn't know how to combine Kobe and Shaq's talent.
It wasn't
until they hired Phil Jackson that he was able to mesh these two generational talents together. Yes. The Lakers would always fall short. They couldn't beat Utah, and then one year they got smoked by San Antonio. They couldn't get to that next level until Phil Jackson arrives. You know, they trade your boy Eddie Jones. And
Nick the Quick too.
Well, you know what? They didn't need Nick the Quick. But I think Eddie Jones, I think, would have been was a bigger loss because Eddie Jones was such an incredible defender.
Yeah.
Incredible defender. But you had to get rid of Eddie Jones because he was in the way of Kobe getting all those minutes. They were playing the same position. But if you wanted to go small, you could have kept Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones, I loved Eddie Jones. I saw him at Temple. Eddie Jones, one of the most underrated players in the history of the sport. Tremendous defender and smooth. Eddie Jones would be incredible in today's game with the way he plays. Because nobody plays defense. He'd be all defense every year if he played today. But so now we go to Phil Jackson comes, and he institutes a triangle, and no more freestyling. The Lakers were freestyling a lot
until
Phil Jackson got there. No, he set the triangle, and everything was going to go through Shaq with Kobe being the main guy in the perimeter. Talk about the first season of that three-peat. And for those who haven't listened, go back to the Shaquille O'Neal episode, which has not been released the day we're recording. Oh, by the way, Happy New Year to all the listeners out there. Today, it's being released January 8th, but we recorded this December 10th. All right. Talk about your impression of Phil and what he did with that team, that first championship run, and just – with your memory, talk about that first year and how exciting it was.
Oh, man. It was so exciting. I was so happy, you know, because, you know, I always say, like, when I have when Arsenal's doing well and the Lakers doing well, I'm a happy person. And so it was like around the time where Arsenal and the Lakers are also doing well. And so, you know, me as a sports fan, I was in a very, very good space. I just think that the discipline and the order, I think some of the players that we had, I think some underrated players, I always say like Devin George and Derek Fisher, like Big Shot Bob, those cats really, you know, really helped us a lot, especially Big Shot Bob. I mean, Robert Horry, there's a reason why the man got 7 rings. I mean, he's always been part of crucial moments for any kind of championship contender or any championship team.
You know what's great about that, what you just mentioned? Phil Jackson using the same formula in L.A. that he did in Chicago.
Yes.
You got
yes.
the two superstars in Chicago with Jordan and Pippen.
Yes.
But you had all the guy, the role players, the guys coming off the bench, the Paxsons, the Kerrs, coming off the bench and hitting big shots.
Yes.
Just like that Laker team. He had the same formula all centered around, well, Shaq was their Jordan and Kobe until Shaq left was their Pippen.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I just remember I have so many like so many memories with that three-peat team. I remember Derek Fisher hitting that big shot. It was like with a few seconds left. It was like a historic thing. I just remember like, whoa, how did he hit that? Like,
well, wait a minute. You're going to 2004 against San Antonio where he hit the .4 three-point shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
Blurred together.
Mine gets blurred all together. But when we go to the 2000 season, Kobe has what I consider his first breakout season.
Coming out party.
But Shaq, and for more into that, you go back to the archives, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. My co-host and I, we went through that entire run, and we talked about Shaq's greatness. So I'm not going to emphasize Shaq. We'll emphasize Kobe doing this three-peat. And yes, like Mabinti said, that's Kobe's coming out party was the 99-2000 season. And in the finals that year against the Indiana Pacers, there was a game, I don't know if you remember, where Shaq fouled out and Kobe had to take over.
Kobe took over, yes.
Talk about that game. Talk about that game.
Listen, I was scared shitless, keeping it real. I'll be honest. I'll be super honest about that. Because I had a rational, I'm not going to say hatred for Reggie Miller, but...
Look, you ain't the only one, all right?
But, you know, he annoyed the hell out of me.
I'm a Sixers fan, and he eliminated my Sixers in 99 and 2000. Right.
Yeah.
So fuck Reggie Miller. And for all the Knicks fans, I grew up in New York. I'm a lifetime New Yorker. And all my friends were Knicks fans. And Reggie Miller is the most hated man. More hated than Michael Jordan, if you could believe that in New York. See, with Michael Jordan, you can hate him, but you gotta respect him. In New York, they hated and they didn't respect Reggie Miller. Yeah, go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so I was like, we cannot let Reggie win this chip. Like, I just, so I was like, dang, big fella, what the heck, man? But you know what? I had confidence in Kobe, because you could just tell he was chomping at the bits to have this moment. You know, you could tell that he really wanted to show people that, yeah, you know, Shaq is a big man on campus, but I can hoop too. And I think as a Kobe fan, that was a proud moment for me. I've got a lot of proud Kobe moments.
Let me tell you something about that game. That was a huge game because it flipped the series. The Lakers lose that game. The Pacers are alive. Kobe came through huge in the overtime.
Yeah, big, you know, they say big cojones. I mean, you know what I mean? Not everybody, and that's something that I always stress with any sport. And it's, you know, not everybody has that strength and that mental fortitude to take over in dire situations and to step up. So it's one thing to be super talented. It's another thing to have the bravery to step up when you know it could easily go wrong. And that's what I've always loved about Kobe. That's why he's one of my favorites of all time, if not actually he is my favorite of all time, because he had that, no matter what, I'm gonna take responsibility, whether I miss a shot and whether I make it. I mean, that's his strength. I always got mad respect for people like that.
They lose Shaq early in the overtime. Kobe takes over and scores the last 8 points for the Lakers. Just incredible. And that was the day. And this was one of the last playoff games my father and I saw together. because my father would pass away that July 30th. So this was a month, more than 6 weeks before he passed. And we watched it. My father couldn't talk because he had throat cancer. They took his voice box out, and he was so frustrated with the voice instrument that made him sound like this. He hated it. He opened up the window and threw it out the window and never asked for another one. So he would write down stuff. Mm-hmm. And during that, he wrote down, "I know you hate this little motherfucker. That little motherfucker is bad." And I hope
it's a bad boy.
I was like, oh, he took against an Indiana team that was a tremendous team. That game, the Lakers go up 3-1. If they lose that game, it's 2-2. It's anybody's series.
Yeah.
Because remember, Indiana won the next game to make it 3-2. It could have been easily 3-2 Indiana going back into L.A. Now, I still think the Lakers would have won that series, but it would have been a nail-biting 7-game series.
Yes, yes.
Instead of the 6. And then they win the championship in game 6. And for the first time, we see Vanessa. Because Kobe's all kissing up on Vanessa and stuff. And my father, his eyes lit up. And I said, "Oh, Pop, she's pretty, right?" And he nodded his head.
That's funny.
He was like, "Yeah, so that's the first time we see Vanessa." Shout outs to the beautiful Mrs. Brown.
Yes.
And they win their first championship. And now they go on a roll and take it to the next couple of seasons. Before you talk about 2000-2001 season, I just want to bring up something. That season, you can make an argument that Kobe and Shaq were the greatest 1-2 punch in the history of basketball, because they both averaged 28 points a game that year, and I believe the next guy was 11 points per game. It was the Shaq and Kobe show, period.
Oh, yeah. Period. Yes, yes, yes.
I've never seen Klay and Steph be a 1-2 punch like that.
No,
LeBron and Anthony Davis. So you can name all the great teams. Duncan never had anybody that he could have. So Kevin Garnett, nobody. That was an incredible 1-2 punch. Both men scoring 28 points a game. And talk about that season. Your memories of the 2000-2001 Lakers second consecutive championship.
Well, what I remember is the narrative around AI. No disrespect to AI. Fantastic player. Obviously, he's from the DMV, from Virginia, so got mad respect for it.
And I'm a Sixers fan, so be careful.
Okay, I'm just, you know, no, I got you. I got you. I'm a Sixers fan. I know a bunch of those.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, so for me as a Kobe fan, as a Lakers fan, I'm going to be honest, I think Kobe went in there to show people, like, okay, I see y'all talking about AI, MVP, et cetera,
right?
But
right.
I'm still that dude. I'm still that dude. Kobe, I think he reminded people in the finals too.
And Kobe had a chip on his shoulder because he got hatred from his hometown.
Yeah,
because AI took over Kobe. And to this day, and we'll get into the tragic ending of Kobe's life and everything later on. But even to this day, after what happened with the unfortunate death of Kobe and his daughter, Kobe has never gotten the love in Philadelphia. Even now, his own hometown, it's Iverson's town.
Yeah,
and Kobe just happened to grow up there, which is, you know what? I hearken back to Isaiah Thomas. I compare it to Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas grew up in Chicago, but it's Jordan's town,
right?
And Isaiah's looked at all. He grew up here. But Michael owns Chicago. Mm-hmm. Kobe grew up and the crazy thing is, Jordan got all these championships at least. Kobe got all these championships. AI doesn't have one, but AI, at Philly's town, Kobe just happens to grow up there. And so I think that motivated Kobe a lot.
Yes. I remember him being booed. I remember watching it. So I remember being in my den in my parents' house. And it was this black TV, you know, back in the day, the little, where you had to turn the knob. We had an old school TV, you know.
Oh, that's the thing. Was it black and white?
No, it was in color. But, you know, we weren't that frugal. Like, my mom would always buy these, like, TVs from yard sales and stuff. She would never, my mom mom would never buy a new TV. She always bought TVs from yard sale. So we had the one where you had to like turn the knobs and all that. And so I just remember Kobe being booed. And I remember being pissed off that Kobe was being booed.
Kobe got booed in Philly more than any other city.
Yeah, he did. Especially during that finals run.
And also, they were both drafted in the same draft, the 96 draft. One of the greatest, if not the greatest draft of all time. And it was always that chip. And when we get to the finals, and by the way, the Lakers destroy everybody in the playoffs coming into the finals. Oh, yeah. They didn't lose a single game, and they swept the Spurs, their biggest rival. They killed the Spurs.
Such joy. It was a joy for me. I hated that team.
Tim Duncan was their biggest nemesis throughout
throughout
Kobe's entire career.
It was
Tim Duncan that was his biggest nemesis.
Yeah, remember, for sure.
They both won a number of championships. So, so we go into the finals, and I'm a Sixers fan. Oh, and also Kobe got showed up in the All-Star game that year by AI.
So that's why I was feeling a certain way. That's why I was. You gotta understand, people in DC, everybody was on AI. Everybody, all the kids I grew up with, kids that all my classmates had the AI shoes, and everybody getting cornrows because of AI. And so, you know, as a Kobe fan, I was heated. Like, I'll be honest, I was as heated as he was, you know, in terms of the people just disrespecting my guy. And so for me, the All-Star game, and I was like, okay, I said, wait, in my head, I was like, wait till my guy comes and does his business. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what would have been nice?
DC was basically AI town at that time.
And that All-Star game was in DC.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that All-Star weekend, it was AI and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean,
you had Kobe, you had Shaq, you had all the stars, Duncan, but it was AI was treated as the rock star, and everybody was like, oh, that's the rest of the NBA. Because 2000, 2001, that was the year of AI. He was all over the place, and rightfully so. And in that All-Star game, and I talk more about it in the Allen Iverson episode. Y'all can listen to it. So I'm not go back to the archives and check the podcast we did on AI. We covered it all. I just briefly mentioned the West had a 22-point lead fourth quarter, and AI put on a once-in-a-lifetime performance in which Kobe was on the court for the whole time. So once again, Kobe's like, damn. I gotta get this mother.
Yeah, that's why he started. He's, you know, after, you know, as we'll probably talk about, but you know, after AI put that show on in game one, and he started studying sharks.
Hey, before you go there, earlier in the season, and I mentioned this in the AI podcast, that season the Lakers played Philly in a primetime game, and Kobe blocked AI's shot down late in the game, and that was He came off his player, and AI was and Kobe smacked that shit. And I was like, oh shit, And the Lakers won that game. It was a close game now, which was huge because if the Sixers win that game, they have home court advantage instead of the Lakers. But I don't think it would have mattered. The Lakers were a much better team. It basically was Allen Iverson versus Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah, pretty much. That's not,
so you AI puts on that game one. But that's it. That's it. AI still has a great series. But as I mentioned in the Shaquille O'Neal podcast, Mutombo was like a little boy, even though he was much bigger than Shaq. Shaq bullied his ass off, destroyed him.
Yes. And
there was another game in that series in which Kobe took over and led to victory.
Yeah. I mean, And that was the game. If I just based off of like some interviews that I listened to, because I'm a big Kobe fan. So I even before he passed, I was really into his interviews and stuff like that. But he talked about he remember because he was so embarrassed by game one, he just started studying sharks, and learning, like watching shark documentaries and learning how sharks move, and how do you be cutthroat and decisive like a shark. And you could totally tell, you know what I mean? He was just a lot. It wasn't just focus. It was a ruthlessness to Kobe, a coldness to Kobe, That, of course, we'll see a lot more consistently when he becomes a Black Mamba. But that's kind of the beginning of it, I think.
Hey, just like in 2000, we mentioned the overtime game in which Shaq fouled out and Kobe took over. And that was the deciding game of the series because they went up 3-1. 2001 against the Sixers, and I remember it like yesterday. Shaq fouls out late in the game, but you still have Kobe.
Kobe. Mm-hmm.
And they win that game, and that was the dagger because the Sixers needed that game to have a shot. It was the first game in Philly, game three. The infamous Destiny's Child wearing the Laker jersey, the Kobe Bryant jersey in Philadelphia, and they got booed out the building. Yeah, I mean, that was a who was Beyonce and their designers or wardrobe people?
They it was his mom. Her mom.
What was she doing?
I don't know.
Where was Matthew? You don't send those girls out there in Laker jerseys. I mean, it's Sixer jerseys. No, I'm sorry. They went out there in Laker jerseys in Philly. Yeah. And that was horrible. No. I think it was one had a Laker jersey, one had a Sixer jersey, and one had on like a generic NBA All-Star jersey. No, you're in Philly, the land of the Sharks.
Yeah.
Everybody goes out there in Sixers jerseys. They give you a standing ovation. Move on to your next stop on the tour.
Right.
By the way, I attended Summer Jam in New York a week or two later, and that was the infamous Jay-Z performance where he put up Prodigy in a tutu because Prodigy studied ballet, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you know the macho-ness of and sexism of hip-hop, and the crowd went crazy, and then Jay-Z brought out Michael Jackson, and the crowd went even crazier. Then he did the takeover. But that's a story for another day. But when Destiny's Child performed that night, and they got booed out the building because they still remembered the Sixers' Laker jersey fiasco. Okay, so Kobe takes over after Shaq fouls out. They win that game, and they beat the Sixers handily the next two games. They win their second consecutive championship. They end in a great season with another championship. We go on to their third title the following year. Talk about your memories, 2001-2002.
I believe that's when my hatred for the Kings was exasperated. And when I say I hated the Kings. You know what I mean? Like, there was a...
The Kings were a good team. They were a good team.
But I hated that Mike Bibby cat. Mike Bibby and Vlade Divac. Beating them was one of the most satisfying, in all of sports. You know, I also follow football. But like, of all of sports, all my sports watching days, beating the Kings was the most satisfying victory.
Look, that was a tough ass series.
It was a controversial. I know people who are you know, who don't like the Lakers say it's controversial. A little bit of these people will say that maybe some match fixing or the referee.
Well, the referee years later, we're talking Tim Doherty, came out years later and was caught fixing games.
Yeah.
That quickly went away. It wasn't as big as it should have been. That should have been a huge scandal. You telling me that's the only referee out of all your referees that you caught doing that?
Yeah.
There's always a bigger picture than what they show us.
Right.
But I don't think there was any shenanigans.
I don't think so either, but, you know, people say that.
As good as that team was with White Chocolate and Chris Webber and Mike Bibby, they weren't the Lakers. They weren't Kobe and they weren't Shaq. Let's talk about that Game 7. Going into that Game 7, how nervous were you?
So nervous. So nervous. Are you kidding me? I don't even bite my fingers, but I was biting my nails. Like, you know what I mean? I was so nervous. I have an irrational hatred for that team. Like, to this day, when I see Kings on my Twitter line, I gotta trash them. I gotta troll anybody who's a Kings fan. Anytime I see Kings stuff on Twitter, because I hated that team.
Hey, let me tell you something. Mike Bibby had a huge game that night. He was killing Derek Fisher.
He was.
He was killing Derek Fisher. Derek Fisher couldn't guard him that game, but you have Kobe and Shaq in Kobe played all but 30 seconds of that game.
Had to. Are you kidding me? It's, that team, you know, that team was good enough to even with our power and our team, our squad, Kobe and Shaq and the crew. Those boys had heart, and those boys had Mike Bibby and Chris Webber, a motivated and angry Chris Webber. So my boys had to dig deep and get that victory, because you just couldn't lose to the Kings. You know, you just couldn't. You know what I'm saying? Like,
one thing I want to mention, that game 7, if my memory serves me correct, Kobe played a lot of the fourth quarter in overtime with 5 fouls. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he did not foul out, because this was a very physical game. Mabinsky, right. You remember the NBA back then. It wasn't today you breathe on somebody and get called
right,
a foul.
Right.
Back then, they were knocking you to the ground. I mean, they were physical, and they were – and we all – look, I'm the biggest Allen Iverson fan on the planet. They beat the hell out of Iverson.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Kobe used to get hit a lot. Used to mm-hmm. get hit a lot. You could hurt Shaq. Shaq could get hit by a truck, and he'll just get hit. The truck will get dented, and Shaq keeps going. But Kobe, they used to beat on Kobe because for some reason, and I don't know where this started, people thought Kobe was soft.
Yeah.
And I know that irritated you. I never thought that. I ain't like the dude back then, but he was an assassin.
Oh, yeah. He was very lanky for a while until we started building muscle.
Right.
So, you know, the Froby days was just him being very lanky. And then once he started building muscle, you know, I think he was talking about, I think he said something in some interview that he started not only lifting more weights, but started talking to MJ and also talking to Gary Payton in terms of, like, how do I get out of these situations type of thing. So, he was just very lanky, kind of like when Kevin Durant first came in the game, where Kevin Durant was like super, super skinny. I mean, he's still ridiculously skinny, but he's tall. So,
and Kevin Garnett was like that also when he first came in the league. So they find a way, because of Shaq and Kobe combined for 65 points. Yeah. They win game 7, and then they go on to play the Nets. And I knew this was a huge miss.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was a wash. I wasn't concerned.
The real NBA Finals was the Lakers Kings. It was the right to murder. The winner got the right to murder the New Jersey Nets.
Yeah.
The New Jersey Nets were Jason Kidd and a bunch of role players.
Yes. a young Richard Jefferson, too. I remember a young – for some reason, I hated Richard Jefferson at that time. I don't know what it was. I don't know why I hated Richard Jefferson at that time, but I remember just hating him, Richard Jefferson, at that time. No, that I wasn't even concerned. Because, like you said, the real NBA final was the Kings. And I knew if we could get through this thing with bumps and bruises, oh, gosh, and Jason Kidd. I knew we were going to sweep them. Like, I had no doubt in my mind that we were going to take care of this against the Nets.
It was an annihilation. It was an annihilation. And the Lakers win their third straight. And I know you have to be giddy. Talk about your reaction when they finally sweep them and they got their third straight NBA championship.
Validation, vindiction, all that. You know, I still have the three-peat poster in my house. Like, it's such a special season. Like, you know, it's such a special moment in my life. And you know, the other thing too, they won around my birthday. So my birthday is around the NBA Finals in June. My birthday's in June.
Wow.
In June. So it was a wonderful birthday present to myself. You know what I mean? Because I was just so happy. Like, definitely one of the most joyous sports moments of my life. Just the manner we did it. And again, more importantly, we beat the Kings. Like, you know what I mean? As much as beating the Nets was great, the fact that we got through the Kings, yep, just made it even more special to me. Now it's sort of like beating the Celtics in 2010. I know we'll get into that. That's how satisfied I was.
Yeah. We'll definitely get into that.
Satisfying that was for me.
So after the season was over, the following season, you begin to see chinks in armor.
Yeah.
Chinks in the armor of the Lakers dynasty.
Yeah.
Shaq and Kobe both missed significant time. But I think this is when we first started hearing rumblings of disenchantment between the two superstars, and the NBA pulled a BS move midway through the season because they were afraid that the Lakers would get bumped in the first round. For those who don't remember, or those who are too young to have seen it back then, the playoffs, the first round wasn't best of seven like it is today.
Uh-huh.
It was best of five. And midway through the season, because the Lakers were struggling because of injuries and they were teetering around the sixth through eighth spot at one point, they made the first round a best of seven. And they wound up playing Minnesota, and instead of a five-game series, a seven-game series, this is the Minnesota of Kevin Garnett.
Yes.
It is
Sam Cassell, too, right?
Yeah, the great Sam Cassell. They beat the Timberwolves in the first round. Minnesota fans were pissed because of that rule change. But, hey, if David Stern says this is going to go, it's going to go. He was a dictator. Then they get smoked, destroyed, blasted by San Antonio Spurs. That final game was over before it started.
Yeah.
Talk about your disappointment.
I mean, it's the Spurs. You can't – you know, in the Lakers fandom, there's like – a few teams you just can't lose to, right?
Right.
And the Spurs are one of those teams where you just can't lose to them. I don't care if you got a drag, you're on one foot, you better not lose to the Spurs. So but I was pissed.
But the thing that hurt the most, y'all got destroyed by almost 30 points in your own building.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Tim Duncan destroyed y'all.
I mean, it's Timmy, the silent assassin, right? Like, because Timmy don't talk trash. Timmy just goes out and puts 40 on you, you know.
And Kobe had one of his worst playoff games in that game.
Yeah,
I don't know what was going on with Kobe, and the next couple of years, the disenchantment and the growing tension between Kobe and Shaq reared his ugly head at the worst times. It happened in San Antonio, and Phil Jackson and Mitch Kupchak think, all right, well, maybe we need more help for Kobe and Shaq, and they go out and get two legends.
Yeah, Gary and Carl.
Gary and Carl. What were your feelings when they got Gary and Carl?
What the heck? What the heck?
Because let me tell you, in New York,
what?
Let me tell you something. In New York, the media, those clowns, Mike and the Mad Dog, they were loving it. Oh, this is beautiful. They're going to destroy everybody. I'm like, destroy everybody? They're getting two 55-year-old men. What are you talking
about? Yeah, I was like, what the? What? Honestly.
All they're going to do is take away shots. That would be better it shot made no sense. By Kobe and Shaq.
Mitch was kind of, he's kind of been our, as a GM, not the smartest, brightest GM in our history. That was one of those head-scratching moves. I was just like, really?
Yeah, but you know what? Let's backtrack a second, though. When Mitch Kupchak was the general manager for most of his run until Jerry West left.
Yeah.
Jerry West had the final say. Mitch didn't have carte blanche. Mm-hmm. If Mitch wanted to do something, Jerry West had to approve it.
Right.
So it was like Gary Payton and Karl Malone were his moves, but Jerry Buss could have easily said no.
True.
All right. So, but still, you're right about Mitch Kupchak. He wasn't the brightest dude. He had the benefit of falling back and having the greatest general manager of all time
right?
As his boss. But they didn't. They didn't. Need, I thought. Now, Karl Malone in the playoffs was tremendous guarding Tim Duncan. I'll give him that much. He did a great job in that series, and that Derek Fisher really saved their season with that incredible game-winning shot with 0.4 seconds. Yes. And inbounded the ball with 0.4 seconds left. I'm still not sure how he got that shot off. Talk about that game.
Yeah, I mean, that was a nail bite. Again, I have an irrational hatred for the Kings and the San Antonio Spurs, so I was nervous as hell, I'll be honest. What are those? You know how you're like on the edge of your seat, and you know you're just holding. You just like you. I couldn't even breathe. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was so tense. So when D Fish hit that shot, my shoulders, everything went. I was like, oh my god, thank God.
And then they win the next game. They go to the NBA Finals, and they're huge favorites. Against what I
don't like talking about that finals, man. That still hurts me.
Huge favorites against what the team that I consider the single greatest defensive team in the history of the NBA. That team, you had five guys on that team: the Wallace boys,
Rip,
Chauncey, Rip, Prince, who played tough. Defense. Every one of those guys got in your drawers.
Yeah. And
Prince gave Kobe more problems. The two guys that gave Kobe the most problems in his career were Ron Artest and Tayshaun Prince.
Yes.
Because they got in your face. They shadowed Kobe and they had length. And people make fun. People talk about Ron Artest and the Malice at the Palace. Ron Artest was an incredible defender. When his head was right, which he wasn't most of the time, he could defend anybody. I saw him shut down Kobe. I saw him shut down Paul Pierce in their prime. Well, Prince shut down Kobe in this finals. He shut down Kobe. Other than that game-winning shot, it should have been a sweep. And in Detroit murdered him in all three games. That game five was over before it started.
Oh, my God. I'm
the writing was on the wall. Yeah.
I'm still feeling like I have a friend. Shout out to Kelechi, if you're gonna listen to this podcast. Every time I see him, he reminds me of the Pistons game. He's from Detroit.
Okay. So,
and I remember. Let me tell you something. I was in high school, and I remember talking all this trash. I was like, "Yo, we about to get that fourth one."
Hey, everybody, look.
We about to get that fourth one.
They were huge favorites.
Really believe that. And then,
how do you bet against Kobe and Shaq?
I really believe that, but let me tell you something. This is what happened to me. This is why I always say, you know, I talk trash. But I'm also, you know, I'm even when we lose, I'm still gonna talk trash. Like, this is just my personality. So I was talking. I remember it was ninth grade, and I was talking all this trash. And I remember Jeremy and this other kid Ian were like, you know, when the Pistons swept us, they gave me that whole rest, that whole
they gave me so much hell. They didn't sweep you. Remember, Kobe had that game.
Well, not sweep. You know what I mean? When they destroyed us. That's what I mean. Destroyed us.
They swept y'all in Detroit those three games straight. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, what I'm saying is, like, those two boys in my class gave me so much crap. So much. Like, I left the school. So I went to a different school for high school. I ended up going to Catholic school. They sent me text messages, even though I had left the school. You know what I'm saying? You remember that game? You remember that? But so that particular finals I have bitterness to it because I got those high school memories. I got a couple friends from Detroit, especially this one friend, Kelechi. Every time he sees me, he reminds me of it. Just out of pure principle, he just reminds me about Detroit. Especially when I want to talk trash, when I want to get big about the Lakers, he always reminds me about that series. So, you know, that was that might be tied with losing to Boston 07-08 in terms of the most angry I've ever felt as a Lakers fan.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
To be honest. Okay.
So now the team is broken up.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson retires. Shaq is traded to Miami. And now Kobe. It's Kobe's team. What? Looking back at that point in time, yeah. You being a huge Lakers fan, we know. Did you feel that they had to break up Kobe and Shaq? Did you want them to find a way to work it out? And what was your feelings when they did trade Shaq and Phil left?
Well, I wanted them to stay together. I mean, personally, you don't have to love each other. You got to just respect each other enough and have chemistry on the court to win championships. So I was pissed about that. But I was also I'm a Lakers fan, but I was also a very big Kobe fan. I had to defend him. You know what I mean? Because, of course, everybody said the reason why Shaq left was because of Kobe and Kobe's selfishness, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, for me, it just made me go even harder for Kobe out of just having to defend my guy. But I was so pissed. I was like, what? I mean, I get why Shaq had to leave, because I think Shaq talks about it in the podcast. He said that they really weren't trying to, like, give him the money that he wanted. So it was like either they were, you know, Jerry Buss was like, it's either going to be you or Kobe.
Didn't his daughter have something to do with it? Jeannie Buss? Didn't she favored Kobe over Shaq, and that's another reason why they got rid of Shaq?
Yeah, I think maybe that might have been, but from my understanding...
Because she was about to take over.
Yeah.
She was about to inherit the team, and if she didn't already, and I think she wanted to build around Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just... In hindsight, it probably is the best move for Kobe's career, because he needed to prove that he could win without Shaq, because forever he was going to be... linked to, you just, the only reason why you won those three championships is because you got Shaq. So,
first season they have him, Mabinti. They make a great choice in getting Rudy Tomjanovich, but he gets sick, and they're not playing Shaq Kobe level, but they're competitive, and they have a winning record when Rudy T has to leave. Now, I remember before the season started, he tried to get Coach K to Kobe tried to convince Coach K to, that wouldn't have worked. No, yeah, that would have been a disaster.
Complete disaster. Weird coaching decision.
Rudy T, Hall of Fame coach, and considering the talent they had, because Kobe was basically Allen Iverson now. It was even a bunch of role players.
Yeah, those. Oh my God.
And that was, but when he left and Frank Hamlin took over, then I mean the rest of the team just quit. In my opinion, you're not going to respect this guy who's never coached before, coming off two Hall of Fame coaches back to back, and Phil Jackson and Rudy T, and they have a horrible year. I mean, Kobe has a huge year, but it doesn't matter. They don't make
right.
For the first time in his career, they don't make the playoffs.
Right.
And Phil was brought back the next year. Talk about...
Begging. We begged him back, you know.
Well, Kobe had himself. It helps that he's begging the new owner, okay? It helps, all right?
well. I mean... No comment.
She can pillow talk him into returning, all right?
No comment. No comment on that one.
All jokes aside, if he wasn't with her, he's not coming back.
No, he's not.
He wanted to coach again, and Kobe's there. You could build around Kobe. And so, you know, now that's his Michael Jordan. Shaq is no longer there. And they begin the process. And finally, they make it back to the finals, 2007-2008 season. Talk about that season.
Ooh.
Oh, the first year with Phil back. That was Kobe's MVP season, right?
Right.
Right.
His MVP season was 2007-2008. That's when he won.
When they lost to the Celtics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. And it's surprising he only won one MVP. I always
don't get me started on that one.
It's always crazy.
Stole his MVP, but I'm gonna.
It's always crazy how Shaq only won one MVP, Allen Iverson only won one MVP, and Kobe Bryant only won one MVP. Steve Nash stole two MVPs from all three of those guys. Right?
Yes.
All three of those guys could have won one of those MVPs that Steve Nash did not deserve to get, all right?
It's ridiculous. Don't get me started on Steve Nash. I can't. Yeah, I'm still pissed. I'm still pissed about it.
It made no sense. All right, so 07, 08.
Yeah.
Talk about the season and then talk about the playoff run and then talk a little bit about the finals.
I don't want to talk about the finals. Okay, all right. Well, I'll indulge you. I'll be honest. Paul Gasol had to win me over. I thought Paul Gasol was mad soft. You really saw that really play out in the finals where like Kevin Garnett was bullying the hell out of that brother. Perk too. Big Perk was also bullying the hell out of that kid, that guy. So I wasn't that bought in to Paul. I knew we were good enough because we had Kobe was having a fantastic season, of course, and we had some good players. And I didn't like how we traded Trevor Ariza a little later, but he was starting to develop. But I really liked a lot of our role players, Lamar Odom being one. Of course, D-Fish, I'm always going to – I think D-Fish is underrated. So I liked our team. I thought, okay, we can do something with this team. When we get to the finals, I think that there's a couple of things that come with the finals. For me, when Paul Pierce – and this is why I hate Paul Pierce. When Paul Pierce did that wheelchair thing, you know what's so interesting, right? Like, growing up, you know, you have a natural hatred for – like, being a Lakers fan, you have a natural hatred for the Celtics because it's like I wasn't born during the Larry Bird Magic years. So my hatred is more like pass on hatred.
But right,
that
07, right.
That 07, 08 is when my hatred became authentic and real. Like my own personal, I had a personal vendetta against that Celtics team because of that Paul Pierce debacle where he was, I'll never forget this. I was in my room, in my dorm at University of Maryland. And I remember Paul Pierce faking like he hurt his ankle. And man was crying. He was like, he should have won an Oscar for that. I mean, he was on the floor, grabbing his ankle, moving, you know, the movement around. And they wheel him out, right? They wheel him. And I remember thinking, okay, we got a chance. All right, Paul, we can do this. And then I remember when he came back and he was hopping, you know, hopping and like, I was like, this man, this cheating mother. Like that was the moment when my hatred for the Celtics became real and became solidified. So when we lost to them, I was so upset. I was so, because I hated
that game. That game six was over in the first quarter.
Yeah. I was so upset. Oh my God.
The Boston Massacre. They got destroyed by 39. Yeah. Unbelievable.
But it was so
Boston was the better team, though. Boston was the better team.
Yeah, to be fair, you're right. I won't say I'm not. I mean,
still,
you have a point.
I mean, it was like the reverse of back in 2001. Kobe was now in the Allen Iverson spot. But he's not going up against two all-time greats. He's going up against three all-time greats.
Yeah.
Because AI had to face Kobe and Shaq. Well, Kobe, he's the only, right then and there, he's the only legit Hall of Famer, all-time great, going up against Ray Allen.
KG.
And KG was phenomenal in that series. He was
fantastic. He bullied the hell out of Paul Gasol.
He got any shot he wanted to. Paul Pierce was lights out. Paul Pierce outplayed Kobe in that series.
Yeah, yeah.
And Paul Pierce is the only guy in the history of the NBA that outplayed Kobe and LeBron in playoff series. That's saying a lot. Paul Pierce, you could hate him, whatever.
He's clutch. To be fair, in Kobe's defense, Kobe was compromised. I think he had a knee inflammation, so he wasn't necessarily his best self. That's the thing. That's one thing about Kobe. He's always half broken. You know what I mean? Well, he's always got something.
Well, especially after Shaq left, because he's carried before with Shaq, he was carrying 40 to 50% of the load. Shaq was carrying 50 to 60% of the load. After Shaq left, Kobe's carried 80% of the load.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like
even with Gasol, it's still 80%.
Yeah, but it was an important humbling loss for us because, you know, the famous story of Kobe. When he goes to USA basketball and they win the gold medal, and he put Kobe in all his pettiness, when he gets back to the Lakers, he puts the gold medal on Paul Gasol's locker to motivate him. Like,
that's motivation.
Right. You know, he's petty. You know, I love that Kobe's pettiness is well known. You know what I mean? And so I think it was so important to lose that way because Kobe kind of needed to figure out that he needed to chill out and learn how to use his teammates. And then for Paul Gasol's perspective, he had to toughen up. He had to man up. And you saw him kind of manning up in the 08-09 run, where we won the championship because, you know, like you said, KG bullied the hell out of him. So
now we go to the 2008-2009 season, and they have a great regular season. Mm-hmm. They first round, I was shocked. The Rockets took them to 7 games. Yeah. Talk about that series.
Another nerve-wracking series. But even though you got Tracy McGrady, who's kind of in his bag, and this is probably Tracy McGrady's only chance to play in a final. So you got a motivated Tracy McGrady. You got Yao Ming. You got a Ron Artest who was giving Kobe the business. And so, you know, I was very nervous, mostly because the start of Ron Artest for me and the way he was handling Kobe. But I ultimately knew, like, at the end of the day, we've got...
By the way, if my recollection is correct, McGrady was out for that series, and they still took him 7.
Yeah, but
it was
Artest and Yao Ming. Sorry,
Ming was phenomenal in that series.
Yao Ming was
one of the few times that Ming was healthy. Right?
But I just remember you're right, because that's right, he had knee, that's right, because he couldn't, that's right, he T-Mac bugging. I just remember Ron Artest just bullying that, you know, really kind of containing Kobe. And it really was a series that I was concerned about, but it was sort of like the King series, right? I knew that if we could get through the Rockets, we win in the championship. I knew that for a fact. Cause I wasn't scared of the Magic.
The Denver Nuggets were a tough team.
They were a tough team, but they don't, you know, at the end of the day.
You had your number one nemesis.
Yeah, AI, and you had Melo there.
You had, but that wasn't AI. That was Melo.
Melo and
Chauncey.
Chauncey Billups. Yeah, but
your number one nemesis.
Yeah, you're right. Chauncey Billups, because he gave me hell for the Pistons.
And that was Carmelo at his best. Pistons fans out there, they saw what they could have had. They could have had a dynasty because Joe Dumars drafted that bum, who I'm not going to mention, instead of Carmelo, right before the 2003-2004 championship series. Had they drafted Carmelo, they had the number two pick, all right? LeBron went first. They drafted Darko, and dark days were to be had with that clown, all right? Because if they would have gotten Carmelo, you saw how well Carmelo played with a fastest prime Chauncey in 2009. Imagine Carmelo with a prime Chauncey. I don't think Larry Brown would have ever left. But the Lakers were the better team. It was Chauncey and Carmelo versus Gasol and Kobe. And they beat the Nuggets in 6 games. And now they played the Magic, who upset the Celtics in the Eastern Finals. And the Magic, they were a bad matchup. Dwight Howard was an incredible defender.
Yeah.
He wasn't Shaq when it came to scoring. All right.
Yeah.
He was comfortable in getting 20 to 25 points. He wasn't going to explode for 40 or 45 points like Shaq would have done. In order for the Magic to compete with the Lakers win in five. We talk about the series and talk about how happy you were when Kobe finally got that ring without Shaq.
Oh, it's happiest moment, one of the happiest moments of my life. But it was also, you know, and it's part of the reason why I was really upset when we traded Trevor Ariza. It was a game, you know, it was a series where really the people like Trevor Ariza. And I remember I call him Danny Alves because he looks like Danny Alves. His name is oh my god, I can think of his name. He looks like Danny Alves, but he was a key player. And Sasha Vucevic. Vucevic had some really critical pivotal threes as well. So like a lot of our youngins really stepped up.
Are you talking about Jordan Farmer?
Yes. Yeah, he does look like Danny Alves, the Barcelona player, Danny Alves. Yeah. Yes, Jordan Farmer had like a really, really good game as well. So it's like, you know, we knew that Kobe and you
had Lamar Odom and Andrew Bynum.
Yes. And so, you know, we knew what Kobe and LaPaul were going to do. For me, it was the joy of seeing our youngins step up and make big shots. That's what I really appreciated.
And Derek Fisher's still on the team.
Oh, yeah, because Derek Fisher's a fixture in all of our championships. Okay?
Derek Fisher's still on the team. Oh, my God.
He's a pest. No, he's a pest. I mean, there's a reason why we brought him back, because he's a pest. Derek Fisher's a pest on defense. He's annoying. He's a menace. He's going to be cheap. He's going to take cheap shots. He's going to be dirty.
He was like Phil's B.J. Armstrong. Phil had B.J. Armstrong on the Bulls, who was a similar to Derek. That's probably why he loved Derek, because B.J. was one of Phil Jackson's favorite players, because B.J. played tough defense. And he hit you a shot whenever they were doubling Jordan or Pippen. It was B.J. that would bail him out. And Derek the same way. Poor Derek, man. His head coaching career was a disaster.
With Sparks.
With the Knicks,
the Knicks. Oh, yeah, that was a hot mess.
the Knicks chose him over Steve Kerr. I think they made the wrong choice.
Yeah. Disaster.
So, finish up your thoughts on them winning that championship and how happy you were for Kobe.
Oh, I was so happy for Kobe. The relief that he had and the relief I had was just, oh my God, it was a really happy moment. Cause then I could proudly say, yeah, Kobe, you know, it was cause it was the first chip without Shaq. So it showed that Kobe can win by being the man.
Andy tied Shaq with four championships.
With four championships, right.
Now they both won one without the other.
Exactly.
And now Kobe's mission was to eclipse Shaq.
Yes.
And that's what I believe the 2009-2010 season was all about. And now
redemption.
Going into the playoffs, everybody was talking. They even made commercials. Kobe versus LeBron. That's gonna be the NBA final. But you know what? The Celtics were still a better team. I know. And at this point in time, and I don't want to disappoint you, Mabinti, but in my opinion, LeBron had surpassed Kobe as the best player in the sport by this point in time. I had Kobe 2, LeBron 1. And so the media was hyping the two best players on the planet going to play each other. But even though LeBron, quote unquote, was the best player on the planet, it was LeBron now in the same position Kobe was back in 08. It's one legend going up against three legends, and those three legends plus Rondo shut down the Cavaliers. And once again, LeBron is foiled, and it's Boston versus the Lakers in an epic seven-game series.
Yeah.
Talk about that seven-game series.
Oh, my God. Talk about nerves. Talk about Oh, and I remember like it was yesterday because I was living in a new place. It was my last year at University of Maryland, and I was living in an apartment, and my roommate was a massive Celtics fan.
You know what I loved before we go to the finals? You know what I loved about the play? This was the only time I ever rooted for Kobe. Mm-hmm. When he played was whenever they played D'Antoni and the Phoenix Suns and Steve Nash.
Yes.
Because that was an overrated coach.
Yes.
An overrated point guard.
Yes.
And an overrated fucking team because they played no goddamn defense.
Yes. Right? I hated that team. Oh, my God. I hated that team.
When they blasted them in the Western Finals, I loved it.
Oh, me too. Because I absolutely, because as I said, I don't like Steve Nash. Steve Nash stole an MVP or two from Kobe. So, yeah. So the joy, you know what I'm saying? It was delicious to take care of it, to take, because if you're the MVP and you get all these MVPs and you can't get past, you can't get to a finals, how good are you really?
That's what I understand. He won two MVPs and they choked both years in the playoffs. Right.
So how good can you really be if you can't even get to the finals?
We'll talk about how good he because we came to the Lakers.
I'm just saying. Okay. How good can you really be when the chip's on the line? You don't take your team to the promised land. I'm just saying, right?
Jason Kidd took a lesser team back to back finals.
Yes.
Right. I mean, because look. Nash had Stoudemire. He had all these great fucking players, man. Come on.
No excuses. There's really no excuse, but so
we get to the finals.
Right.
From your memories, recollection of that epic, and this was an epic seven games. This was on the level of those 80s Lakers-Celtics finals.
Yes.
It was heated, and you know what? The NBA was begging for LeBron versus Kobe, but they got a better.
We got a way better product.
We got a way better product in Lakers Celtics.
Because of the history. I mean, not just because of the teams, but the history. You're talking about the two most successful franchises in the history of the sport. So it's legendariness to it. Like I said, I was in college, finishing my last year in Maryland, and I remember my roommate was talking all this smack. My roommate's a Celtics fan, and she and her boyfriend. We were watching the finals together. So they were talking all this trash and literally, you know, laughing in my face, making jokes. You know, they just, all this type of stuff. So for me.
Hey, you guys were down 3-2.
Right.
Going into game 6, coming back to L.A.
And so, you know, they're like, oh, it's over for your man. I'm like, okay, just watch. I said, you know, before, you know how people say keep that energy? I was like, keep. Because I was getting attacked by both. My roommate and my roommate's boyfriend. And both of them were just chomping at the bits, just chomping. So when we won, and Kobe went that final game, Kobe, of course, was a bit compromised again with his finger and all that stuff. And so he wasn't having the best shooting night, especially in the fourth quarter.
But so Ron Artest came up.
Here. Ron Artest showed up and hit those big shots. And he kind of – what people forget – because they always want to mention that final, oh, good, you know, Ron Artest saved Kobe's legacy. But people forget that even though Kobe didn't have the best shooting time in the fourth quarter, he was at an all-time high with not all-time high, but ridiculous rebounds, steals. Like, he was defensively, he was locked in.
Hey, and
He was a monster defensively.
He was going back and forth between guarding Ray Allen and Paul Pierce, and both Ray Allen and Paul Pierce had off nights.
So I always say, like, okay, if you're not gonna, you know, this is with any sport, right? Any team sport, particularly team sports like soccer or basketball. If you're not successful offensively. You still have to contribute, and you still got to make your presence known. And Kobe made his, despite not having his best offensive game, but again, especially in the fourth quarter, he more than made it up with steals and rebounds and block shots and all that stuff. He was immense, and then it allowed for, and as people act like, yeah, Ron Artest, yes, he's known for being a defensive player, but if memory serves me correctly, he was a double digit. point getter as well. Like, he at least 20 points a game.
Ron Artest had a Hall of Fame ability. If he wanted to.
Right.
See, Ron Artest was a very unselfish ball player. Reason why Phil Jackson loved him so much. I'll do the comparisons. Ron Artest was his Rod Harper from the Bulls.
Okay.
Rod Harper was this incredibly gifted player who was an incredible defender and was a great scorer with the Cleveland Cavaliers before he came to the Bulls. He changed his game to fit the triangle offense and Phil Jackson's system. Phil Jackson told Rod Harper, you're not getting the ball. You're going to defend. And when you need you to score, when you're open, just make the shot. Just make the shot. Ron Artest, unselfish ball player. Ron Artest could have easily been a 25-point game scorer early in his career. But he didn't want to. He was on those great Indiana Pacers team.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to score. His job was to defend and score when he had to, because he had Jermaine O'Neal. He still had Reggie Miller. He had Steven Jackson. He had a tremendous team.
Yeah,
he was a perfect cog on that team. And when he had to make the shot,
he made him. Shot. He banked him. Yeah, I mean, he at first, and I'll be honest, when we got him, I was sad because we had to trade my boy Trevor Ariza, who I really thought was going to be a young gun. Ron Artest, so you can't
the trade,
really say anything.
The trade makes sense because I also forget, Ron Artest was like a combination of Ron Harper and Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Right? The only guy that could control Dennis Rodman was Phil Jackson. The only guy that controlled Ron Artest is Phil Jackson.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was low-key a little bit hurt because I had such a... You know, he was like one of my favorite young people, but it's Ron Artest. And I knew that we need a little bit more toughness. I knew we need a little more toughness to play if we're going to inevitably take on Boston. So it was really great trade because even though Paul got a little more aggressive and a little more tough, he's still a finesse player at the end of the day. So Ron Artest gave us that steel that we needed to really go to war with the Celtics. Because, you know, that Celtics team beat up on people. Big Perk. I think Big Perk was injured during one of those.
But you talk about Kobe's game 7. He had 15 rebounds despite an off-shooting night. He had 15 rebounds.
Yeah.
Gasol had 18. I didn't know that. Wow. Yeah. Gasol and Ron Artest in game 7. Not only did he hit the winning shot, he had 5 steals.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time, one of the greatest defensive players I've ever seen. You want to ridicule him for the malice of the palace and his mental health issues? When he was on,
he won the best in the game.
He could guard anybody, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so getting him was like, that game 7 was when you're like, okay, you really realize the value that you had in Ron Artest. Like, for real. Like, not only in terms of, obviously, his defensive presence, but also just being ready. I mean, there's a lot of mental strength to not really get to touch the ball for a long time and then be able to hit big shots. So, much love to Ron Artest.
Now we go – before we go to next season – when they finally beat the Celtics, Artest makes that huge shot. They shut him down late in the game. Your feelings. How high were you?
I was super high. I tortured my roommate for that whole week. I gave her hell the whole week. I would send text messages. I would just a reminder every time I saw her in the common area in our kitchen. Oh yeah. Oh, I was so happy because we watched it together. It was myself, her boyfriend, and my roommate. We watched it in the living room, and I was I was talking so much trash. I was so happy. I kissed my Kobe Bryant poster. You know, like it was the greatest feeling. Not only for to get 5 championships, But to beat the Celtics, to beat Paul Pierce, it was redemption. That's what it was, you know, for us. Redemption, to beat the Celtics. Oh, hardly few greater feelings in sports.
Now we get to the next season. And the Lakers have another tremendous regular season. They bring back the whole squad. They beat the Hornets in the first round. And then I don't know what the hell happened. I thought they were a better team than the Mavericks. Dirk Nowitzki, the Mavericks, murder you guys.
I didn't get it. I don't know what happened myself.
What happened?
I don't know. Is it championship fatigue? I don't know. I don't know what happened. It was one of those weird things. I thought for sure we'd get back into the finals.
Have you ever noticed Kobe and Shaq, and then Kobe later on, whenever they lose a major series, they get massacred in that decisive game. It happened in 04 against the Pistons.
Yeah.
It happened in 08 against the Celtics. And it happened in 11 against the Mavericks, where they lost. I think they lost by at least 25 points in that fourth game where they got swept. They got destroyed. It was a massacre.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I think maybe part of it might be too much on Kobe's shoulders and wearing him out, and then maybe hit him. And the thing about Kobe, you know, Kobe's my guy. He's my favorite player ever. The thing about Kobe, too, is that sometimes he forces the issue. And that, instead of kind of relaxing, letting the game come to him, and that can have a big impact on series too. So I really don't know. It's still a mystery to me. We should have been back.
And it was the second year in a row, Mabinti, that the NBA didn't get their LeBron Kobe matchup. Instead, they got LeBron and the Mavericks, and the Mavericks break LeBron's heart, and the Nowitzki gets his championship, and the Lakers have to go back to the drawing board, and it looked like they got that Christmas miracle when during the offseason they traded for Chris Paul.
I don't want to talk about this. I'm so mad. I'm so bad about this.
About this yesterday on Twitter.
I'm still mad about
it. What the fuck was David Stern doing?
So the way Jeannie Buss explains it. So Jeannie Buss was on All the Smoke with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. This is how she explains it, right? She says that because David Stern was not only commissioner, but he was also like de jure owner of the Hornets.
The league owned the Hornets because they were looking for an owner. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That they, you know, it would be in acting in the interest of the Hornets, it would be a move to allow that trade to happen. So it's still BS to me, but that's how she explained it. So what could he do? And of course, people like, you know, the San Antonio Spurs were putting a lot of pressure on the league to not let that happen, you know, for obvious reasons. So a lot of it was mostly that. And again, the owners, there's no way in the hell the owners were going to allow that trade to happen. They were really fighting and pushing David Stern to make sure that he blocked the trade. It's BS, but what can you do? I'm still mad about it, and obviously Chris Paul's still mad. He's still some sort of way, because he would have. I think if that trade went through, I think Kobe would have had a much longer career, less injuries, and probably wouldn't have had that Achilles tear. Mm-hmm. I think he probably would have had six or seven, at least six championships. He probably would have tied Jordan if he had Chris Paul, just because of the he. You know, a lot of times that people forget that Kobe a lot of times had to be point guard too, because because some folks on the teams just couldn't bring the ball up. So he had a lot of times.
But also the reason
he had to do too much.
But that's the way the triangle offense of Phil Jackson's system is that the shooting guard, because Jordan handled the ball most of the time,
right?
Pippen. It you don't necessarily need a point guard
per se, right? But
so that's why Kobe handled the ball a lot, because it fit right into the triangle system,
right? So I think that, and then you know, just having I just really believe that, you know, if Chris Paul came to the Lakers, it just would have been a different situation for the for our franchise. We probably would have, like I said, would have had Kobe probably would have 6 championships, and Chris Paul's career would have changed dramatically. I think he would still be with the Lakers if he had been traded to us. I think he still would have been. Because I genuinely believe, even though eventually we had to deal with Jeannie Buss's dumbass brother, Jim Buss, his owner, and his dysfunctional ownership, I genuinely believe that, you know, we would have had some really good successful years with Chris Paul. Even if the front office was dysfunctional, because as you know, as a basketball historian, we had a very dysfunctional front office for some years.
I still think it's dysfunctional.
I still think it's dysfunctional too. But I believe it. See, here's the thing: I believe in Jeannie Buss.
Right now, in my opinion, Rob Pelinka is the acting GM, and the real GM is LeBron James. But that's another story for another day.
Yeah, of course. Everywhere LeBron James goes, he's a GM. Let's be clear. Let's not act like that's why it's funny. That's why on Twitter, I don't know if you saw my tweet. That's why I think it's funny that LeBron James fans are like, oh my gosh, he's wasting his last years in the Lakers. Well, He picked the team. What are you talking about?
He goes wherever he wants to go, and then when he gets to LeBron James, look, quick sidebar.
Sorry to go a diversion, but
He went to Miami.
Right.
This is the only time in the history of the NBA where I saw the superstar of a team allow another superstar to come in and push him to the side. Dwayne Wade, I love Wade, but you don't let another guy come on your turf and take over. He immediately let LeBron James.
Yes.
How are you the franchise player and you bring in another guy and you step to the side? Curry didn't do that with Durant, right?
No, he didn't.
Kobe would have never allowed that. And Jordan would have never allowed that, all right? AI would have never allowed that.
Yeah.
No. Patrick Ewing would have never allowed that. No. LeBron comes in, and it's his team. He comes to the Lakers, and it's his team. But quick divergent.
All right.
Chris Paul would have helped them, and it would have been, again, the NBA would have gotten that LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
Kobe
no style. Doubt. No
but
doubt.
Instead, they lose to an up-and-coming Durant.
Okay, see, was special.
With Harden and Westbrook, these guys were hungry, and they destroyed the Lakers. Talk about that series real quick.
It was a bit shocking. You know what I mean? Like, to be honest, it wasn't something I expected. But, you know, because usually in those cases, I'm a longtime sports fan, so I like, multiple, as I mentioned, multiple sports. Usually in those cases, the veteran team usually takes care of business.
The first time it played, and the second time, the younger team adjusts. Like, remember, the Lakers had the growing pains. They couldn't beat the Spurs. And then finally, they got over the hump.
Right.
But this time was different. The young team just railroaded the older team.
Yeah. So I was a bit shocked because, like I said, like usually the veteran team has a know-how and knows how to win. And usually the younger team is still over-eager and overzealous and learning how to win. But they, if I recall, I think Perk was on that team, right?
He was on the Oklahoma City team.
Yeah, OKC. So say they had a few folks who have been there, done that.
Guess who else was on that team? Your boy.
D Fish. So they had those. So it wasn't like they were just a completely young team. They just have a bunch of clearly young stars. So they had those veteran folks who were champions. They had championship DNA in their squad, which I think helped. But I was really shocked about that. I was like, oh, okay, this was not what I expected. I expected for sure.
And also, it was the first year without Phil.
Yeah.
Phil had left, and I did not like that. Mike Brown's not a good coach.
Oh, no.
I think if you would have had a better coach, you might have had a shot at beating Oklahoma City. Mike Brown, when Mike Brown was in Cleveland, he was the de facto coach, all right? LeBron was the coach.
Yeah. And I think of the Lakers, I think the Lakers, Kobe was kind of coaching as well. I mean, I remember many occasions.
And Mike Brown wasn't a good coach.
I remember many occasions Kobe and Mike Brown used to get in arguments on the sideline. I remember vividly.
I don't blame Kobe. Mike Brown's an idiot. He's not a good coach. He spent his years in Cleveland doing whatever LeBron wanted to do, came to the Lakers and had the nerve to try and tell Kobe what to do.
Yeah.
No! As Kobe's crazy. Team. If Kobe does not respect you, you're in trouble. They needed to get a different coach. I don't know whose decision it was. It was probably Jeannie's to hire Mike Brown, but that was a horrible decision.
Well, I don't think Jeannie at that time was. I think if I recall, Jeannie was doing more like engagement stuff. I believe it was.
That didn't have to be Mitch Kupchak then.
Yeah, Mitch. I think it was just all Mitch. Jeannie didn't come to ownership, because you remember Jeannie had to go to court to wrestle ownership of the Lakers
or command of the Lakers.
Later on from her dumbass brothers. the decisions those fools made in the later Lakers years is just
okay.
Unfathomable. So
We go to the next season, and man, Kobe has to deal with Mike D'Antoni. Oh God!
Who I think single-handedly ruined his Achilles, but that's just me.
And you went and got Steve Nash. Steve Nash.
A washed-up Steve Nash at that.
Washed-up Steve Nash. So it's D'Antoni and Nash equals no rings now. Brooklyn Nets fans out there, you're never going to win a ring with Nash as your head coach and D'Antoni as your main assistant.
Yes.
All right, it's not happening. All right. I don't think Kyrie is sitting out because of not being vaccinated. I think he's sitting out because he's tired of listening to
D'Antoni's and Steve Nash, yeah.
Oh, but D'Antoni was a bad fit. Bad fit.
Yeah,
and they get smoked in the playoffs, but they're an old team now, and they get even older with the addition of Steve Nash, who gets hurt, and the Spurs again. Duncan. I think Tim Duncan was your number one nemesis during the Kobe
era.
This is the beginning of the end. The Lakers are bad for the rest of Kobe's run.
Yes.
Talk about the rest of Kobe's run and his historic final game of his career.
Well, I don't really. Count the latter part of his career, because he was a broken man.
Okay.
He was you always saw him bandaged up.
Yeah.
Achilles, knee, shoulder. I mean, he was a shadow of himself. I don't really consider that my guy. You know what I mean?
All right. What about his? Let's just talk about the final game of his career.
Oh my God, I didn't know if he had it. I was shocked that he was able to pull that. But it's the most Kobe thing ever, though. Just when you think he's down and out, he comes in and shows people who he is. Like, it was beautiful to see my guy remind people that he's Kobe freaking Bean Bryant. You know, and it was beautiful to see. Beautiful to see.
Now
we're gonna. This podcast will be coming out a couple of weeks prior to the second anniversary of his unfaithful accident and death. Where were you at the time it happened? And man, how broken up were you?
Oh my God. I'll never forget it. I was at University of Maryland 10 years later. You know what I mean? I was in a production meeting with my team, my Common Sense Entertainment team.
It was a Sunday morning.
Yes. And it was my creative director. We're literally in the middle of the meeting, and my creative director, who's also a big Kobe fan, he wasn't there. He wasn't at the meeting. He was at the meeting via virtually, and so he texts me the TMZ article about Kobe Bryant passing on. I was like, I don't believe this. I text him back. This is a joke. It's TMZ. I don't trust TMZ. And then I started getting text messages from my friends who work in the media. And I still, I'm like, it's Kobe Bryant. It's Kobe Bryant. Like, I text him back, nah, I'm good. It wasn't until I got to Twitter that, and I got a call from a friend of mine who is a big Lakers fan. Then I was like, no way. That whole day I was in shock. So for me, it reminded me, I literally felt this when Aaliyah passed, you know, because they passed in a very similar, eerily similar way. Shock. I was in shock the whole day. I couldn't wrap my mind around my guy going out like that. You have this, false, I don't say image, but you have this sad, like, belief that your heroes are gonna, you're gonna out, you know, are, you're gonna be able to see your heroes ride off into the sunset. And so I just couldn't wrap my mind around Kobe Bryant passing away in that way. Like, I don't know what it was. I kind of thought that maybe, you know, he'd survive. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. So I was hurt. Like, the first 2 days I was in shock. And then you start seeing the ESPN tributes.
Yeah.
And you started seeing the L. Duncan tribute. That's that L. Duncan tribute. I didn't cry until I saw the L. Duncan tribute. The girl dad situation. That's when I cried. And then I just kept crying the whole week. That whole week I was mourning him. I was crying. I couldn't really function properly because the shock and then the sadness of it, just the way it wasn't just the Kobe part, it's the fact that Gigi, Mamacita, passed. Yeah. And I remember just being so excited for Kobe and the Bryant family because they got a young bull in Gigi. And I remember seeing her, seeing her videos of her, you know, playing with her dad. And I remember prior to that, I had watched Kobe on Matt Barnes' show, and I was just so excited about the future of Kobe's future, and like what he was doing with not only like in the film world, but particularly women's basketball and Mamacita. So it was really sad.
He probably would have been a WNBA coach.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And he would have been a great one too. It reminded me of the day Aaliyah died. Another one of your heroes. And
yes.
I was like, both times I was shocked. I was like, this can't be true. So let me lighten this up because, you know, this is a celebration of his life.
Right.
Let's get to the question I ask my co-hosts every week. Top five of a particular team or league. Since you started following basketball,
yeah,
your top five Lakers of your lifetime, starting with number five.
Number five, I gotta say, Derek Fisher.
Go ahead.
And the reason why Derek Fisher's in there because he's a like I said earlier in the podcast, he's a fixture in every Lakers championship that of my lifetime. He's been in there. Clutch
except,
shot.
Except the last one.
I don't really
count. You don't count that. You Lakers fan.
I'm joking. Of course I count it. But I mean, it's not the same. Okay,
I agree with you.
It's not the stable center. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like they went to Miami. You know, Miami Beach.
What you call
you know?
That? The lockdown championship. Yeah.
Yeah. Know. It's sort of like when the Spurs. You remember the Spurs won a championship during it was like 99, I think 99 something.
It was the lockout season.
Yeah. Obviously, for the purposes of talking trash to Celtics fans and other fans, I'm of course count it. But right. In my heart of hearts, I'm like, it's an. But so Derek Fisher.
I tell you, who's always going to count it is LeBron.
Of course, LeBron's going to count it, and the LeBron fans, his stands are going to of course count it. They're going to be like, he saved the Lakers franchise. That's the thing that's going to have on my head forever. It's so frustrating dealing with LeBron fans. It's like the worst.
You're number four.
My number four is going to be, I got to put Ron Artest on there. And Ron Artest is going to be number four because of the big shot that, and because post that Celtics run, he still provided some really good mentorship, and he was still a pretty productive player. But for really, for me, it's really that big shot, and this is what he did in that 2010 run. I got to put him there. And then my number three is Paul Gasol. Gave us two chips. Was a heck of a finesse player.
And I understand that he's still huge with the Lakers organization as the an off the field consultant.
And, yeah, I think so. Yeah. And he's and I got much love for him because the way he's kind of stepped in and helped the Bryant family, like, much love. And we're waiting, as Lakers fans, we're waiting for him to, for his jersey to go up. So, Genie, come on now. Make that happen, please, ASAP. Okay?
We know who your top two are.
Of course.
Who's number two?
Well, you know, Shaq is number two.
Okay. So we know who number one is. Okay.
So you know who number one is.
I agree with your top two. Because Shaq was only there for seven seasons, maybe. Kobe was there three. Kobe was there his entire career.
Yeah, five chips.
All right.
So versus three chips.
I make the same comparison when people talk about Magic and Kareem. I got to put Magic over Kareem because Magic was there his entire career.
Right.
Yes, Kareem was there 13, 14 years. But remember, Kareem won nothing before Magic showed up as a Laker.
Right.
So I can't argue. Your top five is a beautiful top five. Now I'm going to get, we're both going to get tweets about, oh, where's LeBron?
I know, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care.
I love LeBron, but you know what? The young lady has spoken a piece, and I cannot argue with a top five. I want to thank my wonderful friend, Mabinti. It was a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you.
I had a blast, and I will definitely have you on in the future. What we could do in the future is we could we'll talk about it. For the listeners out there, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.